Thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
What time period does the book start with?
In the introduction, I talk about some of the history of vacationing and tourism and outdoor recreation in Colorado before World War II, but the bulk of the book after the introduction is really about the period since World War II, because that's a time when you see tourism taking off as a really massive industry.
And as you just mentioned, you know, you write that after the war, there was this big effort to repackage Colorado as a tourist destination. And you told Colorado Public Radio it became about the consumption of natural places and the packaging of nature.
Right.
What do you mean by that?
I could start with the idea of packaging. By that, what I mostly mean is creating the physical infrastructure that would attract and accommodate larger numbers of vacationers. So there was an emphasis here on making places look nice, you know, just to give them an attractive appearance. But along with that, with infrastructure, with packaging, there was also a very strong emphasis on making these places convenient. You know, the high country had a sort of a reputation for being rugged, for being remote, and trying to make the region much easier to get to and around in. And so that kind of infrastructure involves everything from building highways, building modern paved roads, to building ski trails and ski lifts. In terms of making them consumer goods, that I think all starts with this wider, I guess you call it the ethos of 20th century consumer culture, which is the idea that you shape yourself by the things you buy. And when I talk about Colorado places or settings or landscapes becoming consumer goods, what I really mean is that tourist promoters adopted this core technique of 20th century advertising, which was to try to persuade consumers that to buy this product would bring emotional benefits, it would make you happy. Another part of the advertising side came from, you know, splashy, colorful graphics. Over and over again, you see reproduced these images of colorful high country landscapes, of scenic settings, so forth. Maroon Bells is a really great example.
When did the, I guess, forces behind these marketing efforts realize that, you know, they were more successful than they ever thought they would be?
That's a good question. I mean, in researching this stuff, in talking to various people who were involved, I kind of heard that story again and again, and people saying things like, well, we thought, you know, maybe we could get tourists here, or we could build this resort or something, but we had no idea it would turn into this. A good example of that is Vail. If you interview, you know, some of the people who helped sort of envision and create Vail in its early form, you know, they talk a lot about how it became much bigger than they could have ever wildly dreamed. Throughout the 50s and 60s, you see Coloradans becoming exhilarated by how tourism seems to be taking off far beyond what they ever thought it would. Now, of course, in the 1970s, this is another thing I talk about in the book, you start to see the tide turn a little bit in terms of public opinion, where some people start to think, many Coloradans start to become convinced that tourism has gone too far, that tourist development has basically run amok, that it's becoming an environmental and economic disaster rather than just a boon to the state. And that's where you see the rise. So a lot of the rise of sort of environmentalist sentiment in Colorado by the early 1970s, a lot of it revolves around these fears of overdevelopment, overpopulation from all of these people coming in to enjoy Colorado recreationally.
You know, the Colorado Tourism Office reports the state set an all-time record in 2013 in terms of visitor volume and visitor expenditures.
Mm-hmm.
So tourism is obviously become a boon for the Colorado economy. Are there drawbacks today?
I think at the same time that we recognize the economic boon tourism has been in many parts of Colorado, it's also important to keep in mind that some people benefit economically and many others do not. Anybody could find lots of examples of, say, local business owners who, you know, when real estate values rise in their town because of tourist and recreational development, those business owners can no longer afford the rent. Or service workers. It's a poorly kept secret that you know, a lot of tourist jobs, a lot of service sector jobs brought about by the tourist industry are pretty poor paying jobs. At the same time, we talk about the environmental harm that has come from massive tourist recreational development. You know, we can talk about pollution, sprawl, scenic degradation, water depletion, energy waste, habitat destruction, and the like. But I also try to make the case in the book that tourism had other environmental implications in the sense that it made people care environmentally much more than they had before about these high country settings. People, I argue in the book, really did buy into the products that tourist promoters sold them. They bought into the emotional benefits, and they became very deeply and personally invested in them. And when that happened, they often became very politically involved. in trying to protect the environment of these places. So again, in that sense, I'm not trying so much to offer in the book ways that tourism is good or bad, but ways in which its legacy is really mixed and complicated.
Well, thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thank you.